Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 202, recorded on March 14th, 2014. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing good, and from the tone of your voice, I'm betting you are too.
I am. I got my SodaStream water hanging out next to me, pre-fizzed, so you won't hear any CO2 gases flowing. Unless I burp, I guess.
Unless you burp, of course.
Yeah, maybe flowing a little bit. Adam Christensen is also here from the Maccast. Hey, Adam.
Hey. How's it going?
Good. Here.
Sorry. I just discovered...
Oh, my God, Adam.
People with weird hobbies, right?
Did you send me?
Yeah, I'm looking at this.
I was on Instructables. Some dude makes, like, champagne cork Star Wars action figures.
That is... Where do you... I don't know why someone would just decide to do that, but...
You know, it's totally random.
It is really random.
And the lightsaber is illuminated.
Yeah, LED lightsaber. Luke Skywalker. Looks like there's a Chewie and potentially a Yoda as well. Yep, he's got Yoda.
There's Link. Also a Gordon Freeman.
There you go. All right, people are strange.
For people who don't care about Star Wars anymore... Or who's just like Half-Life. We'll go with that one.
The hair on the Luke Skywalker champagne cork is actually kind of creepy.
Yeah, I wonder if he got it from like a... It looks... Yeah. It looks like
he
hair.
Went out and rolled drunk people in the street and I think it's, ripped I think their it's, hair out.
It's actually Mark Hamill's hair from eBay.
Oh, God. No.
Just kidding.
Let's just stick with that. That's what that is. Because obviously someone... Because why would... Okay, never mind. All right, so we're talking about iPhone stuff. And iOS 7.1 came out this week, which is exciting because it has tons of features. And many of those things we spoke about as the betas were rolling. CarPlay is in there, of course. You can manually control Siri now, which is something... You guys have seen that, right? So you can, mm-hmm. I guess if you hold, how does that work? Because I don't.
You hold the home button down and she will continue to listen to you as long as you want to talk.
So you just, you wake up your phone and then you press and hold the home button until Siri.
Well, Siri will activate and activates. Keep the button held down.
And then you can talk to Siri.
So you,
like this.
So you continue holding and then once you release, she stops listening.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's basically the William Shatner feature.
That's what I've been.
That's awesome.
It, yeah. Siri, what is the temperature? And before, Siri would just be like, dude, what's your problem? Yeah. And now she will dutifully answer you, but mock you quietly on the inside.
Mm-hmm. What happens when you ask her to beam you up?
Oh, you haven't done that yet?
I've probably done it. Here, let me do it. Siri, beam me up.
Can I see your badge, please?
Okay.
The best one is that I've found is you can ask her to tell you a story, and sometimes you have to be persistent, but she will go on a couple-minute diatribe and tell you a whole tale.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, that's say, Siri, cool. Tell me a story.
Oh, we'll do it later.
First time it might not work. And then she'll say, oh, you know, I don't know any good stories or something, whatever she says. And then ask her again and she will go. Seriously, it's the longest response I've ever heard from Siri.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've awesome. Asked her stuff like, well, what it was the other day. I said, Siri, what's the altitude where I am right now? And she replies with, I'm sorry, Jeff. I left my tricorder on the Starship.
That's nice.
I'm thinking, what use is Siri if she doesn't bring her tricorder along?
I know, right? So yeah. Thoughtless. Well, there is a neat little tip. I usually, you can ask her a lot of math-based questions because she has the Wolfram. And so I was thinking about the warranty I have on my sunglasses from Sunglass Hut, and they give you 90 days and or return policy. And I said, so how many days have passed since January 6th? And she told me right away, which is awesome. So if you're wondering about that, how many days have passed
since So Siri whenever. Does word problems.
I wonder if she can tell how many days to my birthday.
Does she know it's Pi Day? And we should say that, too.
How many days until my birthday? Let me have a look. Stupid.
Okay.
No. It is Pi Day.
Siri, when is Pi Day?
Okay, I found this.
Oh, boy.
See,
well, she showed me the date. And it came from Wolfram Alpha.
Oh, okay.
Wolfram Alpha.
So it did actually work out for you.
Yeah, it totally worked out. It's just, since this is not a video podcast, it worked out for me and no one else.
Mm-hmm.
Who's excited about Wolfram Language?
What is that?
A knowledge-based programming language from Wolfram. Stephen Wolfram says it's what he's been working on for the past 30 years, and he's going to get set to release it. So check out wolfram.com/language. And there's some like really cool videos explaining the whole thing. Check out the introduction video.
That does sound pretty cool.
Geek out on that. It's like supposedly going to change the world of programming, like for forever.
Neat.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Guy's smart enough to pull it off for sure.
Oh well, yeah, that's true. So let's see here. There's some changes to iTunes Radio. Camera settings, iCloud keychain, calendar, of course, you have that little button to show your events, so the list of events, which is something that everybody's been complaining about since iOS 7 came out, although I never realized that you could just hit the search button and just give you the list right there.
So that was a great interface design. They gave you a feature with no way of being able to intuitively figure out where it is.
Yeah. Whoops. So, yeah, 7.1. Also, Apple TV has gotten an update, which is fairly minor, although the best feature, I think, is that while you have been able to rearrange the icons on the screen by you press and hold on the center button and they start to wiggle and you can move it around, it will also say, hey, you can also hide those icons from the main screen by pressing play pause once it's started to jiggle, and then you can press the hide this item button. So you've been able to do that since for a long time from the settings menu, from parental controls, but it wasn't obvious before. So that's nice. And it's cool that Apple credits evaders for discovering some of their security flaws.
Is that cool or is that just like a taunt, do you think?
I think it's a little bit of both. They certainly expected it. It's what you would assume is going to happen with one of these updates. I wonder how long it's going to take until there's another jailbreak for 7. But right now, if you're a jailbreaking person, then you're going to want to stick to what you're on now and don't restore because you won't be able to. And 7.1 also improves performance for iPhone 4 users, which is really awesome because 7 was a dog on iPhone 4s.
But it's much better now. And it's much better on the iPad 2 as well.
Oh, nice. And that makes sense because they're both A4 chips, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. That's very good. Yeah, Ars Technica did a little comparison of application launches, for example, and they've greatly improved. So Safari was 1.13 and 6 and then went up to 2 in 7, and now it's down to like 1.8. So they're getting pretty close to what it was before. It doesn't look like it's back to what it was, but it's certainly better. And you know, any little bit helps, especially when it's, you know, as bad as it was. So that's great news. We were talking about the warning message thing last week about in-app purchases that Apple was, did we say that Apple was scrambling to fix that? I think that was at what Apple was scrambling over, supposedly. And of course they just put a little warning saying, hey, you just made your in-app purchase. That's cool. But just so you know, for the next 15 minutes, you'll be able to buy more things without entering your password. But if you aren't cool with that, press this button and it'll take you to settings and you'll have to go change it yourself. So it doesn't do that.
So go team.
They did not scramble. And if they did, there was no reason for it. Because that was a pretty... pretty easy fix, I'd say. Pretty bare bones. And we were talking about the aftermarket additions for CarPlay, the idea of bringing CarPlay into cars that don't come out with them, like the ones that were debuted last week. Pioneer supposedly, so someone called them and a customer service representative said that they're working on doing the integrations, and I guess they then contacted 9to5 Mac and they said that no, we don't really have plans to do it, but we don't have plans to not do it. They just kind of clarified it, but ultimately it seems as though it's going to be a little more difficult than what everybody was sort of saying initially. And it makes sense because we're not just talking about a head unit here where you just pull one out, hook up a wire harness and put the other one in. You've got a pretty sizable screen, and I assume some firmware that's necessary to interface properly with the iPhone.
Why?
Why what? Why would it be difficult?
Yeah, why?
I would say the main difficulty is that you would want something that could easily get thrown into another car in just one that wasn't designed for it, but also Apple needs to provide the support for it.
Right. I mean, it's my understanding from some of the stuff that I think was Volvo put out. There was some information that, I mean, in terms of how it's actually doing, like the on-screen display and stuff like that, it's just doing H.264 video to create the interface. Oh. So it's more like, huh?
Interesting.
Yeah, almost like it's air playing the video. And then obviously there's a control layer within whatever the in-car system is that would send control commands back to your phone, to iOS, to the CarPlay, to actually get it to, you know, launch apps and do all those sorts of things. But it's not a... it's not like iOS is running on the CarPlay system, from what I understand, from everything that I've read, that it's more a communication between the two devices. So to
that's
me,
that's my understanding too.
Yeah, to me, that means mainly the difficulty would be you wouldn't be able to just take a unit like that. There'd have to be some sort of bridge unit to get the two talking to each other. But beyond that, like in terms of display, I mean, really, they're just using the in-car display as a monitor at that point. You know, the trickier part is going to be that communication layer. And obviously, they're going to have to get approval from Apple for that. But I would imagine that that layer could be written in anything. In most cases, it's sounding like they're using the QNX system from BlackBerry on most of these new systems. And that's been Apple worked with BlackBerry to make that happen and get that integrated. But I wouldn't think that would preclude some other system from working, which is why I think we've been... had also heard that Mercedes was looking at it for their older units, which I'm assuming wouldn't be, you know, necessarily like QNX based, which would mean they'd have to write some sort of layer for those older systems to be able to do the communication back that it needs to do to interact with Apple's CarPlay, you know, interface or APIs or whatever is happening on that side of things.
Yeah.
But I mean, it seems like you could probably cobble something together with an LCD, and if you could get you know, I don't know if it's part of Apple's Xcode development kit or whatever. I'm assuming there's some things in there. I haven't dug in.
I think there are.
Yeah, but I would think it would just be standardized calls you would make back to launch apps and to you know, then have the display pulled back onto the on-screen display. So, you know, whether or not Apple's going to authorize it or work with you, that's a whole separate thing. And so maybe that's where the hang-up might be, or maybe Pioneer and those guys are looking at it and going, well, it's not worth the licensing to do because we're not going to sell enough of these units, or whatever the motivations might be. But as far as the technical limitations, from everything that I've read, it seems like it should be totally possible.
Yeah, it seems like it's totally possible.
You know, and there may be a whole exclusive thing too. Like, I mean, the car manufacturers may have paid to make sure that for the first year, a couple years, they're the only ones that are going to integrate with CarPlay.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
I mean, that might be part of the deal.
I would speculate that probably is part of the deal.
Yeah. Like I said, the most expensive iPhone accessories ever.
Cars.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, what kind of case do you have for your iPhone?
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, I have the new Volvo.
Yeah.
X80, yeah.
It's got side airbags. It's really good.
Yeah.
Little iPhone airbags.
Yeah, instead of going kaboom, they go poof.
It's a little puff.
So I hope that there's some aftermarket solutions, but if not, I fully expect someone to hack one together.
Oh yeah,
at some point that'll
happen for sure, and I'm sure it'll involve taking spare parts from a Mercedes or something.
Well, and as somebody pointed out, I mean, like, the even easier way to go is just do the integrations that people are already doing, where you just, you know, embed an iPad Mini into your right. dash, and you're done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have more, and then at that point you have more functionality than you do with the CarPlay system.
You do, but the benefit, of course, of the CarPlay is that things are bigger and optimized for
UI,
driving.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because Lord knows you don't want to be looking at your phone and driving and those tiny letters and all that stuff. So.
Oh, it's not like people do that anyhow.
That's true. That wouldn't happen.
Right.
Well, yeah, and more Siri control and all that sort of stuff. So.
Yeah. So, let's see. On to iOS 8 rumors. They've just begun flooding in suddenly.
And they're crap. They're crappity crap, 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 crap.
Okay. Well, we'll let you respond to each one in turn. How about that?
Okay.
So the first one, and I don't know how you could say this one's crap, but according to 9to5Mac, Apple is planning to have transit directions in iOS 8 maps.
Okay, that one's not crap.
Yeah, that one's totally happening. The only thing that, and there's a really cool mock-up of it too from 9to5, but I really miss that in the current operating system. But for me, I'm going to be really concerned about it giving me the right information or leaving some things out, because Google is really good at, you know, in Chicago, for example, the CTA as a whole has the L train as well as buses, of course. And, you know, if I need to get from A to B, it says, well, if you want to do that, here are some options. If you only want to do rail, or if you only want to do bus, or you don't care about doing a combination, here's how to make it happen. And I have this sneaking suspicion that this first incarnation is going to have me do some extra stuff, or it's going to say, nope, you can't do it, when the information is false. So I hope that Apple tries very, very hard to make this thing as bulletproof as possible. Because when you're doing transit, that's a whole other ballgame than when you're driving around. Because if you're driving around, you're in your car and it's pretty easy to make corrections. Just a couple more minutes, one direction or the other, you can just turn around. But if you spend a half an hour going in the wrong direction on the wrong bus, that's going to really piss some people off.
Yeah, I shouldn't laugh, but yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it.
It'll be real easy to set up in Denver, because you'll be able to, you'll say things like, Siri, what bus will get me down to DIA from where I am? And Siri will just be able to laugh at you. Because our public transit system is horrible.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, what else? Oh, this one's interesting. This might be the crappity crap one. Apple is looking to, according to, again, 9to5Mac, that they're looking into integrating preview and text edit, document viewing in iOS 8. Because, of course, we can save anything in preview to iCloud. Same goes for text edit. But, of course, the way that Apple's stupid little sandbox thing works is, sure, you could open a text edit document in Pages. And if you have Pages on your iPad, you'd think you could open that if it's saved to iCloud. But if you saved it in iCloud using text edit on your Mac, you can't get access to it. So that kind of makes sense that you'd want this extra ability to look at those documents on your iOS device.
Yeah, you'd think that, yeah, that would make sense. It wouldn't surprise me if Apple does something that makes it easier to access preview and text edit documents on the iPad and on the iPhone. The part that's totally fakety-fake on that is the icon mockups that we're seeing.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's not a mockup. So I think it was the same day someone found, geez, I don't know where they found this thing.
That graphic.
On a message board or something like that. It was a screenshot of supposedly iOS 8 that includes a health book icon, a preview text edit, and tips icon. Tips, we've not heard anything about. Of course, we've heard about health book, and it sort of looks like what we've been expecting it to look like. And then preview and text edit are just...
It looks like the mock-ups that other people have made.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the problem. With the health book icon, regardless of whether or not that's actually what it ends up looking like, what we have seen so far are icons that people mocked up and said, well, I think it could look something like this. And because we live in the interwebs, that morphed into, these are leaked icons of Apple's new app. And the same thing is happening with the preview and text edit. There's no way those are the icons. Someone took the icons from the Mac and in Photoshop dropped them into a graphic of an iPhone screen and said, look, I have photographic proof of these apps. And if I rolled my eyes any farther back in my head right now, my retinas would detach.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, so, what most people are arguing for this screenshot, and I think that is plausible, is that these are placeholder icons for those apps that will manifest themselves in iOS 8. Now, whether or not...
They're not even placeholder icons.
No.
Do you think that these apps will manifest themselves on iOS 8? I mean, 9to5Mac is a pretty... They have pretty good sources on that, and they say that basically these apps won't be... So preview, you won't be able to edit anything. Text edit, you won't be able to really edit anything. It'll just be a viewing application.
What's the point then?
Yeah.
Well, because
why not just make those things work, editing and previewing and
you already have
roll
the
it
notes
into Pages
application. Or yeah, notes, you already have Pages. You have the Photos application. You have the iPhoto application. You have all of these mm-hmm. apps that are there that are capable of handling the content. Why should you make additional apps that let you do little more than view the content? Just put the hooks into the apps you already have and call it good.
Yeah, and so I agree with that one. And there's one other report that came out. And again, this is more stuff from 9to5. They're just getting some interesting stuff here. They're saying that one of the things that they have heard about is that one of the things planned for iOS 8 is more cross-app integration. I'm trying to look for inter-app communication is what they're talking about. They say it's known as XPC, and they say that this was an API was being developed and was included in beta versions of iOS 7, but never made it to the public version. I hadn't heard anything about that. Is that something that you guys have
heard? I hadn't
of?
Heard anything about that either.
Adam?
Nope.
No? Okay. I don't know about that. You would think we would talk about that, but I hadn't heard about it. But they're saying that the inter-app communication stuff is being developed, an API for that for iOS 8. That would not surprise me, and I think that fits along very nicely with the idea of having access to preview and text edit stuff within the current ecosystem if those extra APIs are available so that you can actually get access to those documents that are on iCloud already with the apps that exist.
Here's the problem I have with this, and I'm not saying this to imply that I think there's no way this will happen, but here's the problem I see. Apple has spent a long time training us to accept on some level the fact that once a document ends up on our iPhone or iPad, it's bound to a specific application. There's no file structure for us to look at. I mean, there's none of that. If they start opening up iCloud or the storage soup thing that's in our iPhones and iPads to third-party developers, that starts taking us towards a more traditional file management system. And I really don't think Apple wants to go down that path. That said, it would be really cool to see an API so that developers could set up their apps to access documents that weren't originally assigned to them.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that one. So if they're doing it that way, where let's say you're not able to access the documents that TextEdit created while you're in Pages, yet you can shoot it off to Pages from TextEdit, or if you're in one app and you want to share some information with another app, making it much easier. I mean, that's got to be in there. There aren't very many huge complaints about the current state of iOS that one can make that are bigger than that. So,
it's certainly a long-running complaint.
Yeah, that'd be very helpful.
The only thing I want them to add in regards to this is I really wish we had print to PDF.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Oh my God, I would love that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a licensing thing is why it's never been implemented, but I mean,
no, PDF is an open standard.
Yeah, that's baked in.
Yeah, if they just add in print PDF so that I don't have to send stuff to an actual physical printer or do some lame workaround to get, you know, something in iCloud, it'd be great to just be in any app and say, you know, just put this in my iCloud as a PDF. I know we can export from like Pages and stuff like that, but to have that in any app that I can print from would be really nice.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Also, according to 9to5 on iOS 8, they're saying that they're looking at simplifying the notification center, getting rid of the missed tab, and just merging that into one. So there'd be two tabs instead of three, which makes perfect sense because I never go to missed.
Which one is that the one that's kind of foggy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I don't like that one either.
Foggy? What are you talking about?
When you said
it's kind of misty,
I heard MIST.
Oh, okay.
And then I realized what you were saying.
Womp womp.
And I heard MYST, then changed it to MIST, and
and got the joke before I did.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense. I never look at MIST.
I don't either. I don't use Notification Center too much.
I use it all the time.
Yeah.
It's
go in there just to clear the notifications.
Sure, there's a lot of that, but the today view is I look at that almost every day.
I probably should.
And I mean, it's mainly
a nice view.
I wish it would consistently tell me what the temperature is, because sometimes it's like, yeah, the temperature is 74, and then it gives me some other information about the weather later. But say right now, it says just went away. Mostly sunny currently. No temperature. The high will be 75. Okay, that's not helpful regarding current temperature. However, the little calendar preview down at the bottom is nice.
Yep.
And the thing that says you have an alarm set for whatever and whether or not I have stuff scheduled for tomorrow. All that stuff is really nice. So I like the today view. The all view helps out when I feel like I'm missing things. But a lot of the time, it's just...
Might be that I get all that on my watch now, so...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right. You're one of those fancy guys with a pebble.
Yeah. Well, and it's the smart watch plus that does that, right? So it's got the current temperature and anything that's coming up next on my schedule, and the time, all that fun stuff, so... Which just proves the case for an iWatch to a certain degree, which I wasn't sold on when I first got the Pebble. But now that the new Pebble software has come out with a few more apps and a little better integration of stuff, it's still not perfect, but it's somewhat more useful.
What happens when you lose the link with your iPhone?
That's the biggest problem with it, actually, is that it's the Pebble stuff is... Every once in a while, I'll lose the Bluetooth, and I just got to kind of quit the app and restart the app. And yeah, so there's a little reset thing.
On the Pebble, or you quit the app?
Typically,
on the
I have to do the app, and which that's is on the running phone? In the background.
The app on the phone? I don't understand how the Pebble works. You have to.
Yeah, there's a Pebble app that runs on the and runs to, on the phone, and there's a SmartWatch it. Plus app that runs on the phone.
And you have to quit that to.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. This little dance that you have to do. But, you know, yeah. I would assume that's the kind of thing where if Apple was doing their own watch, obviously it's going to be baked in at the OS level, stuff that Pebble can't do because of this whole sandboxy crap. So,
right.
You know, and they just proved it with the whole now beacons can run without, you know, having to have the app even running thing.
Oh, good point.
With the iBeacons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So obviously there's ways to do low energy Bluetooth communication without the app even being launched. But, you know, of course, Apple's going to probably be the only folks that can really enable that or allow that. So
sure. Yeah. And the last thing that 9to5 pointed out is that they're hearing Apple's considering getting rid of the Game Center app.
Oh,
although they would continue having Game Center, they just get rid of the app.
Yeah, I think that's. So it'd just be baked into the apps that are running it, right? Which is pretty much how it works most of the time for me anyway, right? You're pulling up Game Center inside the app as a layer sort of on top of the app that you're viewing it in.
Right. Now, the only thing I think doesn't work with that is finding friends.
Yeah.
But right. So you just have to figure out.
Yep. Sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, well, you have to figure out a new way to do that. But if you're baking in a new layer for apps to show your Game Center data, there's no reason why you couldn't include a find friends thing in that part. Yeah. And then it would just be every app where you're accessing Game Center, you can also access your friend list.
Sure. Something like that.
Yeah, my thing is why couldn't that whole thing, your friends list could just be baked into the settings. You already have Game Center settings.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing
there
in
go.
There. Just add an extra little, one little extra screen that's just managing friends.
That would work.
That could work.
Yeah, you know, really don't need a whole separate app. I never launched that app, ever.
Yeah. Neither do I. So, let me derail a little bit and ask you guys a question. So, Adam, you didn't get a coin, right?
I did not get a coin. Are those out now?
Well, you didn't order one. So, Jeff, you ordered one, right?
I did.
Now, did you hear that next October, not this October, next October, they're going to be switching from the magnetic swipe to the chip and pin thing for all credit cards? In the U.S.
Awesome.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
Because this country is so messed up when it comes to changing ubiquitous technologies like that. I would like to be Chip and Pin because everyone else on the planet is.
Sure, yeah.
Even if they did, yeah, even if they did, it's going to take them 5 years to do the conversion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think they say they're going to have it done by next October.
And we're all going to have fiber, too, to our house.
Yeah.
We're getting that,
How's
too?
That going for them?
Yeah, the battery in my coin will die before Chip and Pin has been fully implemented in this country.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, if that would die before that happens.
And I'm guessing this is all being prompted by all the hacking that's been going on. So the targets
Well, Chip and Pin wouldn't have helped with Target.
It wouldn't have?
Nope.
I guess it makes sense. Why?
Because they had all the data in the database. Meaning Target had all this data about us in their databases. They were given multiple warnings that hackers had put pieces in place to be able to start siphoning information off of them, and they chose not to do anything. And then the data got siphoned off. So they allowed these security breaches to go uncorrected.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, in this case, there was no way that our data could have been protected because Target chose not to protect it, even when they had warnings. So Chip and Pin wouldn't have done us any good right there. Yeah. But for other places, sure, Chip and Pin could be a much more secure way of handling our credit cards.
Yeah, but it's going to be so slow moving that I don't think it's a threat to the coin.
Oh, no.
Probably.
I mean, how many businesses are going to switch over their card readers?
Yeah, that's true. There are all of the businesses, and I'm thinking also, you know, what about Square kind of thing too?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's probably going to be voluntary at first. I'm sure it's not going to be mandated. And even if they mandate it, there would be such pushback from businesses that I don't think they could. Again, it's going to take years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And in that interim, credit card companies will either have to give us two cards or they'll have to make a hybrid card that still has the stripe on it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, just curious. So I asked. According to...
Which is why Apple needs to just do their phone thing everywhere and let me pay with my iTunes account.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Slap your iPhone on a register and, you know, doink it on there and it just...
Oh, no, don't even have to touch it.
No?
Just use Bluetooth LE and... there you go.
Yeah, the iBeacon tech.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
No phone slapping unless that's what you really want to do.
I do kind of like phone slapping.
There's nothing wrong with that. As long as everyone's consensual and it feels good to you, slap away.
Yeah, I think they have a couple phone slap clubs in San Francisco I can go to.
They probably do.
DigiTimes says that Apple's iPad Pro project is reportedly on hold.
Oh, for the love of God.
Okay, which...
Let me get this straight.
Which part don't you like?
Just... Okay, first you said, so DigiTimes, and at that point I was already like, oh God, here we go. But... Okay, so there's a rumor of a bigger iPad.
Mm-hmm.
There's no evidence of a bigger iPad. But now there's a rumor that the rumored product... has been delayed or dropped.
Yep. And this is fun, isn't it?
Let's go back to talking about phone slapping.
I don't think there's much else to be said about it.
Just, holy crap, really? Just, yeah, you're right. I'm going to get all wound up and aggravated and upset about the whole rumor big iPad thing.
Yeah. Well, we talk about rumors sometimes, so.
Yes, I guess, but this one's especially stupid because it's a rumor about another rumor.
That's true.
And there are blogs and news sites out there that are reporting this as fact.
Oh.
Of course there are, because we live in a world filled with stupid people. It's up to people like the three of us to protect everyone else.
Let's start a rumor about the rumor about the rumor that there that rumor isn't a rumor.
Okay, so it's
you heard it here first, people.
It's not a rumor anymore.
Nope, it's not rumor anymore. Yep. Well, the rumor about the rumor isn't a rumor.
Yeah.
I kind of want pizza. I think I'm going to go get some pizza after this.
Do we have anything factual we can talk about? I guess we did iOS 7.1.
Yeah, we got something factual for you. You want to talk about Neil Young's Pono player?
Did that come out?
oh, my God.
I saw this story and I'm like, hold on, dude. Like, I just go back in a time machine or something? Because
it's a big scam, really.
You think it's a scam?
Did it get released?
Oh, it has been released. It met its funding goals. I'm sure it will get produced, and it will be sold. So that part's not a scam. It's the whole thing about the audio fidelity. It's a total load of crap. It's snake oil.
Okay, so give us the rundown on why this thing exists and why you think it's stupid.
Okay, the reason it exists is because Neil Young thinks that that he needs to have his player. My guess is that someone left him butthurt about a music deal somewhere along the way, and this is his own personal therapy, and he's getting people to pay for it. So
well, he's upset. He says that the audio quality is bad everywhere, and that he needs to make something.
Okay, here's what's wrong with the audio quality everywhere. It's not the bit rate. It's the compression algorithms. So, or the encoding algorithms. And most of those are just crappy. The audio quality for bit rates for a CD, so what is that, 44.1?
Mm-hmm.
That is fantastic. The problem is the encoding that's done on the tracks when they're converted to be actually put on the CD. Those apps, those algorithms that are doing that, for the most part, are crap. People and companies are using old technology because, for whatever reason, I'm assuming they don't want to buy the new stuff. They don't understand the new stuff, and so they're taking something that has the potential to be very high quality, but what they're outputting from there is lower fidelity, crappy stuff. And you're not going to be able to get anything out of you don't need to go above 16-bit on your audio for playback. 24-bit for recording makes sense because there's other stuff that has to get mixed in when the sound engineers are doing their magic. But when you mix down and send it out for consumers to listen to, you don't need it to be above 16-bit. Anything above that, and you're just making bigger files that aren't going to sound any better. It all comes down to that encoding algorithm that people are using.
Yeah. So my question is, how is Neil Young going to get the proper source material to live up to this expectation of high quality audio for this thing?
Well, that's a problem.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you give Neil Young to crank through his magic system. It's not going to sound any better than anything else.
Well, and the other side of it is over and over, the majority of consumers have proven that they don't give a crap.
That's right. That's also, and I think that's probably the most important thing.
I mean, we're watching stuff on YouTube and we're listening to our music on streaming music services, which are the most popular thing right now.
Well, the people who listen to music on YouTube make me cry.
Well, it doesn't even matter, but even take Spotify or Pandora or iTunes Radio or any of these services, which consumers are more and more saying, this is how we want to listen to music. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not even getting close to the stuff that he's calling crappy that iTunes is pumping out. I mean, that's lower than that. Right?
Yeah. Yes. And, okay. Now, there are all kinds of people out there that listen to satellite radio. What is it? Sirius. And they'll listen to the music and they think it sounds perfectly fine. I think it sounds great. But the audio quality of the music you're getting from satellite radio, it's pretty compressed. It's not that great. It's just okay. And considering the number of consumers that will listen to that and think it sounds really good, that's pretty telling. People just most people under regular listening circumstances, which means in your car, which is a crappy place for audio quality anyhow, or in the office or wherever you happen to be, that they can't tell the difference. When you crank up the bit rate and everything else that they're doing with the stuff that Neil Young wants to do, you're creating stuff where people can't hear the difference anyhow. Like, we are physically not capable of hearing the difference. Our bodies do not have the components necessary to hear the difference. And people, they don't know. And, okay, here's the deal. If you want to have much better sounding audio than what you have today on whatever device you're listening to, go out and buy yourself a really good set of headphones.
I was going to say, that was going to be my next question, is are they going to bundle with this thing a super high-end set of headphones? Like, the headphones are going to be $1,000 before you even invest in the player. If you're truly going for that quality of audio, that's what you're going to have to do, right? Or at least, yes, a $500 pair of headphones.
Right. And yeah, the kind of headphones you need to really be able to hit that audiophile level, I guess, you can't go into Best Buy or Fry's and pick these up. You can't buy that level of quality at places like that. I mean, yes, they do have good quality products that you can buy, but they aren't going to be the level of quality that you need to really be able to hear the differences. Yeah. So, yeah, just go buy yourself a nice pair of headphones, even if it is at Best Buy or Fry's. Doesn't matter. That's going to do more for your listening pleasure than anything else.
Like, how much is this thing going to cost?
$400.
For the player.
Yeah.
And people are going to plug in crappy earbuds into it. And they're going to say, oh my God, I can't believe the difference in the audio quality. This is so much better.
Well, you could pump out
and it's a placebo.
You could pump out the same exact audio quality on an iPhone or an iPod or what have you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a whole set of audiophiles. I guess, you know, it's a niche market and it's a niche product. So it's, you know, you really shouldn't bash it for existing, because there are going to be people who do care, who are going to pay $500 for the player and $500 for quality headphones and $25 an album for the music and love it.
You're absolutely right. And I guess the bottom line is, for those people, if it makes them happy, then good for them. If they think that they are seriously getting substantially better audio quality because of the encoding, the bit rate, then they are being misled. That's not where the good audio is going to come from.
This has been tried over and over again, though, right? I mean, we had high-definition CDs, right? Or whatever it was called. Didn't Sony do like a really 24-bit higher quality CD format for a while?
Yes. And you know what
Super
made those
CDs
sound better?
Or what were they called? Was it Super CD?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What made those sound better wasn't the fact that they were 24-bit. It was the fact that the masters that they used were higher quality and they used better encoding algorithms. They could have done the exact same thing at 16-bit and it would have sounded just the same. But, you know, they could call it 24-bit because that's what they were doing. So they were being honest about that. And then they charged more and people bought it and they loved it because it did sound better, but not for the reasons people thought it sounded better.
Super audio CD, I think is what it was called.
Ah, yes, that's it.
Yeah. So this has been tried over and over again with digital formats since we invented digital formats.
And after Neil Young's player goes on to be whatever it is, good, bad, successful, whatever, there'll be someone else that will come along with a different product that they will claim is even better. And people will buy it, and some people will love it, and I will sit here and probably rant about it, just like I am now.
Good.
It's definitely, I mean, this is way niche. I mean, this is not any kind of threat to, well, you know, let's be honest.
This
Apple,
isn't
Apple's their own threat to their iPod business. I mean,
yeah,
so right. iPods are gone anyway. So I don't know what it's competing against.
Yeah, you're right. This is no threat to any product that Apple makes. And honestly, I'm not sure what products out there this would be a threat to. This is just like its own little market. Niche, yep. Just like you said.
Yep. All right. So anything else to talk about? Do you want to go to the picks? I think it's time to go to the picks then.
Yeah, I've been all ranty today. Sorry about that, people.
Yeah, it's all good. Jeff, I'll let you go first.
All right. I'm going to pick something that I'm pretty sure I have picked before, but it's different now.
Okay, good.
And that's Paper by 53. They just did an update for the app.
Ooh.
And it's great. So for those of you that don't know what Paper is, it's a drawing app, and I absolutely love it. This is my go-to drawing app on the iPad. And the update that came out just a couple days ago fixes a lot of issues that people were complaining about that weren't really issues for the most part. They're more like, wouldn't it be great if we could do this instead or this in addition to? So they fixed the zooming feature so that it works better. It's easier to use now. And instead of having to sit there and try and find workarounds to get your line thicknesses to work appropriately when you're zoomed in, they changed it. So now when you're doing dots and stuff like that in a zoomed in area, you're working with a smaller point, which totally makes sense. And they changed up some interface elements so that it's easier to deal with image sharing. The application is faster overall. It's a point upgrade, but they if they tossed in a couple other little nuances, they probably could have called it a full major step upgrade. It's just fantastic what they did with this app. And you can get it for free. There are add-on packs you can pay for that add in more art tools. But you can get it and play with it and use it as much as you want for free.
Cool. That's Paper by 53. And Adam,
yes.
What's your pick?
So I'm going to get all coder and nerdy on everybody.
Cool.
Because I think last time I did the whole iBeacon thing. So I've been messing around with the Bluetooth low energy with different stuff. And I have an Arduino. And there's a company called Red Bear Lab that makes a shield. For those people who don't know, Arduino, you know, is a little hardware platform that you can code in, basically a little computer. And you can use it for like rapid prototyping of hardware stuff. And they have these things called shields, which are just basically expanded functionality that you can plug into this board. So it's another little board you basically dock on top of the Arduino, and then it adds additional functionality. And there's all kinds of different ones. What Red Bear Lab makes is they make a Bluetooth low energy one called the BLE Shield. And I got one of these, I think it's about $29. I think it was about $30. Plugged it in, and then they have on their website, you can go, they have an app that you can download that will just let you control the digital pins, basically the stuff you would plug in. So if you want to set it up to turn on and off lights or control servos or what have you, you can do that. But then on top of that, they have a library that you can load in and basically use for the Arduino to do programs, and you can interface if you want with Xcode. So I found a little how-to on, I think it was on Instructables, and was able to compile and create a iPhone app that would allow me to control through Bluetooth LE the digital outputs of my Arduino. So in the little demo that I set up, what it just does is it gives you a little analog stick. And as you roll around the analog stick, it will light up or control the opacity of different LEDs that I have on my breadboard connected to my Arduino. So I'm totally not a hardware guy. I'm just totally a tinkerer, and I'm curious about it. And it's just so cool to me that, you know, within an hour or so, I had this little running demo using Bluetooth LE and an iPhone app to control Bluetooth LE and basically light up these little LEDs. And now that I know how to do that, I can kind of look into the code and start to expand it. So I'm already thinking like, oh, this would be cool if I can get a little motor and maybe build a little Lego car. And then now I have built my own little iPhone controlled car or something like that. So
yeah,
that's fun to just kind of hack around. And it's amazing how inexpensive and accessible. I'm trying to remember. I keep forgetting how much the Arduino is these days. I think it's around 40, 50 bucks, if I'm not mistaken.
That's
an Arduino Uno. I might be getting the price wrong. I got to look that up. But, I mean, you get this stuff and you can just start kind of hacking away. And you don't need to be like a super duper programmer or anything like that. Like I said, I mean, this one little app I had, I found was already on GitHub. I think it uses a little JavaScript UI controller for like the analog stick in the iPhone interface. But then it's, you know, it's Objective-C under that. But really, I just had to hack a couple lines to make sure like the pins and stuff that I was trying to address were the right pins. And, you know, and then it just compiles. And the only thing, if you're going to do an iPhone app, obviously you need to be in the Apple developer program. So you got to pay your $100 to be able to actually run it on your device. But beyond that, you know, and you can just mess around just with the Arduino and this Bluetooth shield and play around with turning things on and off with the little app. The little app just basically says, you know, light up pin one or pin two on the Arduino board, and you could control stuff that way. And what's their app called? I think it's called BLE. Let's see if I can find it here. BLE Arduino is the app you can download from Red Bear that just controls the pins once you've connected to their board. So, if you've ever been interested in Bluetooth Low Energy and want to mess around with it with hardware, it's a nice little platform to play around on.
That's cool. You can get an Arduino Nano for $20.
Yeah. I think there's different models. The Uno is kind of the most basic. They have a couple newer ones that can do a lot more, that have better processors, have onboard. Like, I think there's now one called the Yun that I think has onboard Wi-Fi and
yep.
And some other stuff.
And there's a Yun. There's the Leonardo.
The Leonardo. Yeah. The
Omega.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can go up and up. And the Uno, I think, is the most basic one. The other one that you're talking about, I think, is really limited in terms of what you can do with it. I haven't messed around with it too much. But
yeah, it looks pretty basic. But yeah. Cool. So my pick this week is going to be a free one. How much is, did you say how much the BLE shield, or what is it?
I think
it's
like $29. I think it was $29 on Amazon when I bought it.
Okay.
And yeah, the Arduino Uno is only $30 too. So,
yeah. Yeah, cool. So my pick this week is free, and it's called CryptoCat. And I've used this service in my browser every once in a while when I decide that I need to have some kind of encrypted, you know, no history saved sort of chat with somebody. And now you can get it for your iPhone. So you can do that on the go. It doesn't have as many things as I would have wanted as far as being able to link up with people in your address book. So let's say I wanted to have a CryptoCat, an encrypted chat with Adam, and my phone knows what his information is, and I would expect to be able to just say, hey, you know, give me a link up with Adam, or at least let him know in some way that I want to do this. But it's pretty bare bones, and I think they'll probably keep it that way. They kind of like doing it. They're heavy on the security and keeping it pretty basic. So the way it works is you enter in your nickname and the conversation name that you want to have. And so you just name it like whatever. You just come up with some kind of name, and then you put in your nickname, and then you press connect, and then you're thrown into an encrypted chat room. And then you tell your friend, hey, you know, join kittycat123 and chat with me.
So now we know what you're using this for.
What am I using it for?
Chatting, of course.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, so it's a neat little app if you ever need to do an encrypted chat. I keep it on my phone. Haven't really found a use for it yet, but I mean, I didn't really use the service that often. But when you need it, it's nice to have it, and you can do it now, and it's free. So it's called CryptoCat, one word. So, yeah, with that, where am I? iPhone picks and show notes can be found at wehavecommunicators.com. The show notes, review the show in iTunes. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is the email address to which you can send feedback, questions, comments, all that sort of stuff. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Contact them if you want to advertise. And we're going to be at Macworld, all of us, which is cool. And of course, you should tell your friends if you're going to, you should tell your friends about the show. I don't know why my brain is all scrambled right now. I'm looking right at what
you're thinking
of
pizza.
I'm thinking about pizza. Right. I'm thinking so much about pizza right now. You know, if you type the little pizza character, the pizza emoji into Google, it does not know what you're talking about. Further evidence that machines don't understand emotion.
That's a complete internet fail right there.
Yeah. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, at jgamet on Twitter. And someone's paying ads to make the We Have Communicators mug show up on Google Ads for me.
It's cool. I don't know who's doing that.
That is Zazzle.
No, man. Someone's paying for it. Because
you've been to that page and Zazzle knows it. And so they do that. Amazon does that too. You've been to Amazon browsing stuff. When you see Amazon ads on other sites, it will be embedded with the stuff that you've been looking at on Amazon.
Okay. Ruin the illusion.
Yep. They're watching you.
I was trying to feed into the illusion.
They're watching you.
They are
Big Brother,
me.
Man.
That's true. CryptoCat's not going to save me.
Opt out of your cookies.
I should opt out of cookies. Just make my life hell. Adam Christensen's at the MattCast, MattCast.com, at MattCast on Twitter, and member.mattcast.com is the member version of the show. Are you doing?
Yeah, we're going to do a. Let me tease that because I'm getting George Starcher and I are working on a whole episode on iBeacon.
Oh, so cool.
We're going to dive in a members episode deep into iBeacon and how it works and all the technology and sort of some of the applications that you can create your own iBeacon stuff for. So
cool. Are you doing a MattCast sort of meetup or anything like that at Macworld?
No, I'm going to be hanging out. I'll be around. I think I'm going to be on a bunch of different podcasts. We're going to do a live Mac Roundtable. I'm going to be at the Cultcast thing, the live Cultcast recording that they're doing for Cult of Mac.
Oh, cool.
We're going to do a live Mac show. Jeff, are you going to be in that?
Yes, and the Mac Roundtable.
Nice. Yeah. So
yeah,
I'll be around in podcasting. People can follow me on Twitter and all that fun stuff, and I'll keep everybody up to date on where I'm at while I'm at Macworld. So
yeah,
stalk away.
We're both going to be pretty busy at Macworld.
Yeah.
So I have two presentations that I'm doing, plus the two podcasts, and then everything else that's happening. And I think you're pretty much just as busy.
Yeah, I'll be running around the show floor. I mean, I don't speak. I don't do other stuff because it just gets too crazy, too overwhelming. So.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, and really I'm there to kind of cover the show for those MattCast listeners who can't make it out. So I'd like to spend as much time as I can just roaming the show floor, interviewing people and seeing what's cool so I can report back on that. So,
yeah, I'm just going to be mostly hanging out. taking it all in. I haven't been there in a while. So it'll be fun. Of course, you can find me on Twitter at Michael Johnston. That's mine. And at Get Appler is Appler's Twitter. And of course, check out Appler, which is GetAppler.com, GetAppler.com. And yeah, with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.